We are back here on Wrestling Observer Radio. Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here. It is December 8th, 2011. Figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. Very happy today to be joined by Rowdy Ronda Rousey. She is, in fact, on the show. And Ronda, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not too bad. We have your video up on the front page right now. You and Misha Tate from Ariel Helwani's show, which is quite the talk of the town. I wanted to ask you this. Being a good talker, you mentioned this in the interview, and I think most people listening to this are aware of this. Being a good talker is great for MMA because everyone wants to see you fight. But on the downside, then you have to do a million radio interviews all over the place. And I know you did some today. And would you say this is newfound fame in the last couple of months?
In the last few weeks, I would say newfound fame. I think before, you know, it was kind of similar to the level of notoriety I got from the Olympics. And it's only been since the last fight that things have really taken off, or it's like what Dana White's walking up being like, hey, I saw your fight. Like, that tripped me out more than anything else.
Sure. So the fight with Julia Budd, it was your, if you count amateur fights, seventh in a row, under a minute, broken arm. I think it was a broken arm. Maybe they claimed it wasn't. But certainly...
dislocated, not broken.
Yeah, it looked really bad. And thoughts on, I guess, is there pressure on you now? Because obviously you have Judo Jean out there with the stopwatch. And, you know, there's kind of this pressure. Is she going to end this fight in a minute or not? Or is it just kind of you go out there and that's not even on your mind?
No, it's not on my mind at all. I don't feel like I have to end the fight in a minute. I'm just trying to end it as soon as possible. And so far, my first idea, you know, is usually working out.
Now, when you finish all these fights via armbar, is this something that armbar is just kind of your bread and butter hold? Or is it just sort of that the last seven fights, there has been an arm given to you seven times in the first minute of a fight? I mean, are you adept at pretty much all the other submissions as well, the major submissions, or is it just armbar's your thing?
No, I mean, I definitely practice all different kinds of submissions, but, you know, my mom's big thing when she was competing was arm bars, you know. She tore her knees out when she was 17, and she was, like, one of the first judo competitors to only, you know, win on the ground, pretty much. So when I was, 12 years old, she had me do an arm bar drills over and over and over and over and over. And, you know, when I grapple, I could do a billion different kinds of submissions, but I just kind of gravitate back towards the arm bars because that's more what's the most innate to me. So it comes faster, you know.
So is this a deal like the Karate Kid movie where she made you like paint the fence and it like turned into arm bars, or like this natural thing to get arm
like
bars?
The motion of like painting the fence somehow translates over? No. She would actually just make me do arm bars over and over and over and over.
Now, a lot of people don't know this. In fact, probably almost everyone listening doesn't know this, but your mom was the first world champion first women's world champion in judo ever to come from the United States, and
it wasn't the women's world champion. She was the first everyone's world champion in judo from the U.S.
Okay, well there you go. You're correcting me. Was there from her perspective? Did she? I mean, were you kind of pushed into judo, and also was there anything from her side? I mean, I'm just looking at it from her perspective. Here she was. She was a world champion, but she could never go to the Olympics because there was no women's judo in her day. And here you are with the talent to, you know, realistically, you know, you could have won a gold medal or certainly won a medal at the 2012 games, and you decided to go to MMA and you decided judo wasn't what you wanted to devote your life to. I mean, did she not care at all?
Well, when I first started to want to do judo, you know, she didn't want me to do it because she thought, you know, too many people would expect too much out of me because I was her daughter. But then once I started doing it and she saw I had a talent for it, she was behind it 100%. I don't think she felt bad that she couldn't compete in the Olympics in judo back then, because there's still a lot of countries boycotting the Olympics, and she didn't really care about, you know, getting the you know, fame that comes along with being an Olympic champion. She just wanted to be the best in the world, and she felt that winning the world championships in judo meant you were the best in the world and not the Olympics, because you were only the best of who showed up, pretty much, back then. So I don't think she felt like she had to push me into the Olympics because she couldn't do it herself. But she was pretty disappointed at first. I think everyone was disappointed at first when I told them I didn't want to go for my last Olympic run, because you're supposed to peak in your mid-20s. I got my bronze at 21, and everyone was like, oh, you're going to be the first American to win the gold medal. You're the bright white hope. And when I told them I didn't want to do it anymore, there were a lot of people that, were not very happy with me. And it took and when I started doing MMA, I was like, no, I'm going to be the best in the world at this, and I'm going to win a title. And I had a lot of people telling me that I wasn't capable of that, and I was making the biggest mistake of my life. And you know what? You just sometimes unbeaten path is bumpy, you know? I'm happy I went the way I did.
You talked in the Ariel Helwani show about living in your car and obviously, you know, not making any money off the Olympics. Did any of that play into the decision to not do 2012 and go into mixed martial arts? Was it a monetary deal, or what were some of the factors that went into this decision?
Well, I didn't enjoy training anymore in judo, and I didn't see any long-term future in it, you know? Like, I won my last Olympic medal, and they gave me, like, 10 grand and a handshake. And it took way more than 10 grand to get that medal. Like, I pretty much lost money trying to win a medal in the Olympics. And I during that time, I wasn't really going to school. I wasn't really gaining work experience. And so, like, I kind of just narrowed down my options to either you're going to be a rescue swimmer for the Coast Guard or you're going to be an MMA fighter, because I didn't want to go back to school. I couldn't sit at a desk. I just needed something different.
The Coast Guard.
Yeah.
That was the other option?
Well, they said, like, I only wanted to do the jumping out of the helicopter into the water part, because I used to be on the Junior Olympic swimming team. Like, I'm actually a really great swimmer. And, you know, I go surfing all the time. Like, I could deal with, like, crazy water. So I either wanted to be, like, the guy jumping out of the helicopter and then swimming over and putting you in a basket, or I wanted to, you know, punch people in the face.
No, you know, when you did that show with Ariel Helwani and talked to had the thing with Misha Tate. I mean, and you were obviously I don't know, 2-3 seats down from her on Saturday night. I mean, did you guys talk? Is everything cool, or did you kind of was there anything, or you were sitting there and kind of looking the other way?
Well, I tried talking to her a couple of times. We were both polite, you know, but we're gonna fight. What's the proper way to go about that? I think that girls are much more, you know, take things much more personally than men do. I don't think she realized I don't mean anything personal. I just want to be the best at it, and I want something that she has. It's not, I didn't like come on and be like, oh, you're ugly and you smell and you're dumb. Like, I was just like, no, I want this. You have that. I take that. That's what it's gonna go. You know, it's nothing disrespectful. And you know, but if you have conflicting interests, then, you know, it's kind of hard to get along.
Now, see, were you surprised at the tact that she took? Because, I mean, the one thing that, I mean, and she got actually an incredible amount of heat out of this was kind of, you know, the idea that, you know, that you've done a pretty decent job of marketing yourself, and that somehow that's jumped you ahead of people because, you know, quite frankly, when it comes to women's MMA, there's really only three names that anyone's talk about, which are Cyborg, you, and Misha Tate right now. I mean, and, you know, there's other good fighters and everything like that, but for whatever reason, they're not being talked about. And you and Misha Tate, or you and Cyborg, or any combination, you know, those are the three money matches, so to speak. I mean, the other matches are fine and good and all that, but they're not going to garner the same amount of interest. And I was surprised that that's so obvious that she kind of took the tactic, you know, the way that she did of, you know, you should, you know, wait your turn, and that, you know, you're doing this, especially because, you know, she did gain her, you know, a lot of her popularity due to her looks and how she posed and things like that, which, you know, I'm not knocking her. I think that was smart on her part, but I just thought for her to be the one complaining, I mean, I could see, like, if Sarah Kaufman complained, I wouldn't say a word. You know, I understand
it's just,
she doesn't
post. It's extremely hypocritical, that's what you're saying.
That is exactly what I'm saying, yes. And I happen to like the girl, but I was shocked that she would say that she would kind of take the tack she did.
Yeah, she's like, you're only getting in because you're pretty. And then you look at her Twitter face, her Twitter page, and it's like her. You can see her butt more than her face, you know? Like, I thought that was so hypocritical, I didn't even need to point it out.
Now, but, Scott Coker, go ahead, sorry.
No, I wasn't going to say anything interesting.
All right, Scott Coker, I'm sure you were, but Scott Coker said that he's open to the idea of this fight. And to me, it's like, well, if you're open to the idea of the fight, make the fight. I don't know if the fight's been made in the last day, but do you have any update on it?
Nothing I could give you, but I'm very good at getting what I want. I'll just tell you that.
So now, as far as the whole thing with weight and everything, I mean, you know, if you would fight for 135, has everyone been told, because I guess there's been talk of Cyborg going to 135, that they want everyone in one weight class, or is there an idea of you fighting her at 135 and then fighting Cyborg at 145, and or if you were to win, you know, how's that kind of been going, that kind of those.
I think they're just trying to push everybody in the same division. You know, I think that if they think that depth is what the women's divisions need, well, take all the girls and put them together. Voila, you have depth. I don't think that's rocket science. I think that's the smartest thing to do.
Yeah. So as far as, I mean, the thing with Cyborg and is she had trouble making 145. I remember one fight here. I think it was here in San Jose where. Mm-hmm. She was like 151, 152, you know, or something like that. I mean, it was going to be a bad deal because the other girl was coming up from like 125 to 145, and, you know, she kind of massacred her because of the size difference. And again, you know, someone troubled at 145, you know, 10 more pounds is it's a big difference.
Yeah, well, I think it would be easy for her to make 135 if she stopped doing certain things, and that's her decision.
Yeah. I mean, for you, I mean, when I talked to you a couple months ago, I mean, one of the things that you didn't like, you told me about judo, was the weight cut.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as is just something that, well, I'm going to deal with it, or can you make 135 with no sweat right now?
No, I can make 135 no problem. The difference between judo and MMA is, you know, you weigh in like an hour and a half before you fight, A. And B, the last time I was making, you know, weight down to the 130s, you know, my idea of a diet was I'm going to eat 10 fudge shop cookies and milk for breakfast, and then I'm going to starve for the rest of the day. Like, I didn't know how to cut weight properly. And, you know, even for a while when I was fighting 70 kilos, like, I just wasn't doing it properly. And all this whole time to MMA, I haven't used a sauna once to make weight. Like, I haven't gone a day without eating. I haven't gone a day without drinking. Like, we've just been so, like, perfect and meticulous about it. And we're just going to get the best nutritionist that money could buy, and we're going to make this weight with flying colors.
What was the hardest thing for you, and you know, as far as the transition to MMA? Was it a physical thing or was it a mental thing? And how's the striking aspect of your game coming along?
I think the most difficult thing transitioning to MMA was money. You know, like what I said, for a while, living out of my car and kind of had that kind of experience was when I was transitioning careers, I had no income in the meantime. I wasn't making any money from judo because everyone in judo pretty much told me to go screw off because I wasn't going to be, you know, completely committed to it. And, you know, MMA wasn't paying the bills at all. So I think the hardest part was for a while, I was working graveyard shifts, working at like an animal hospital. I was teaching, you know, at Dynamics, and I was also, you know, training full time, and it was just, we were like, you know, me and my roommate, we were living in a small one bedroom, living off the Costco, you know, storm shelter diet, and, you know, just at my wit's end, just trying to, you know, make everything work and balance together. I think that was the hardest part, was just getting that initial momentum going to where I could actually pay the bills just fighting.
So was the signing with Strikeforce kind of like a big deal to you at that time? Because it kind of like put you, at least you're going to be getting, you know, regular checks, so to speak.
It was a huge deal. When I was first supposed to fight for Strikeforce, right, when Gina didn't get past the doctor's thing. They wanted me to replace her right away that weekend, but I was already signed to go fight in something in Canada against this girl Charmaine. And then we told them like, hey, look, Strikeforce wants me to fight. Can we please fight? And the chick Charmaine and her manager were like, no, the winner of this fight is probably going to get signed to Strikeforce, and we're going to sue you if you pull out. So I flew over there and I broke her arm. And then I went back home and, because at first I was so excited. I was like, oh, my God. I found out when I was in Rite Aid that your Strikeforce wanted me to play Gina. And I bought everything in Rite Aid that I needed, you know, because I'd been so broke for so long. I'm like, get nail polish. Get toilet paper. I had toilet paper all along. I wanted nice toilet paper because I was using the crappy kind. We were, like, stealing it from restaurants, you know. I'm like, well, get the nicest toilet paper you can find. Everything that's $60 of the stuff from Rite Aid. And they found out that I wasn't going to be able to sign the Strikeforce after all. And so that I was so upset about that I went and literally wanted to kill that girl.
Now you
after that when we actually did get signed, I went and walked over to all my jobs and I was just like, I make too much money, bye, and then just left.
Now the Julia Budd fight, you broke her arm, or you dislocated her arm, as we talked about earlier. And the fight before that, the Sarah Del Elio fight, that was the one where, I guess, you know, she tapped, then the ref didn't see it, then she claimed she didn't, you had to put the arm bar back on. I mean, was there kind of, I mean, I presume that somebody at some point in your career had have tried this before, but was that kind of...
You know what, who tried that before? A Mormon. A Mormon did that to me before.
Really?
I couldn't believe it. Yeah. I armbarred the girl. She tapped. I got up, and the referee didn't see it. And then they asked the girl, and I was like, she tapped. And they asked her, did she tap? She's like, no. And I'm like, you're the worst Mormon I've ever seen. She wouldn't even compete on Sundays she was still Mormon.
Wow.
Like, seriously? You're going to lie about, I can't even trust my competitors to have the amount of integrity that I would have in that situation. If someone caught me and got me an armbar and I tapped and got out, the referee didn't see it, I would have been like, yo, they got me. I'm not going to try and, like, cheat this win out, you know? Like, but after that fight, I felt, like, obligated to kind of validify myself because there's so many people doubting me, you know, that I stole that win. But so I felt like I had to kind of go all out and not take any chances against Julia Budd, you know, because I couldn't have that happen twice.
So is that kind of like your philosophy from this point forward of, I'm going to crank on this arm until I am the man physically pulls me off, or the female referee physically pulls me off this girl, because, you know, fool me once, that's one thing, but fool me twice, that's not happening?
Yeah. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
It's
exactly like that. No, yeah. It's exactly like that. And I, you know, I figure, you know, now I got the green light. I tried being nice, you know, everyone booed me. Now I just gotta go be mean. It's what the fans want, you know, and that's who pays my bills, the fans, so they'll get it.
How did you get hooked up with Judo Jean?
Judo Jean has been good friends with my mom for years and years. I mean, Jean's known me since I was a baby. And it was only until recently when he gave me his autobiography, and I was like, oh, my God, Uncle Gene, you're so cool. But no, I've just known him forever.
Now, I had a buddy who trained with Judo Gene, and they said, man, he's out on the mats all the time. And, you know, he's kind of getting up there in age. But what does Gene do these days in terms of training?
And what does he do? I mean, usually he has other people show stuff for him, like, he'll describe what's going on and have someone else do it. I'm coming in. He's 78 years old.
I am.
He's not, you know, be doing cartwheels.
Sure. Now, your stand-up training, we talked about it briefly earlier, but how is stand-up training going? Was it like a real big shock to the system for you? And what's kind of your philosophy in terms of, do you want to be someone who's great at the stand-up, or do you want to be good enough at the stand-up that you can not get knocked out, get inside, and then finish it on the ground?
I just want to be the best fighter possible, and I have way more experience in grappling than I do in standing, you know, and of course I'm working more on my striking than anything else, but I'm not trying to become the next Muay Thai extraordinaire. Everything that we work on in striking is to make me a better grappler, you know, so I think it's so funny, people are like saying, Rhonda can't strike, da 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 da, but there's a reason why I'm not getting hit, you know. It's not that I'm mauling people. It's not, I mean, you can tell by looking at me and the girls I'm fighting. I don't look that much bigger or more muscular than the girls that I'm fighting, you know. It's, what we're doing is very, you know, technical and planned out. It's just kind of hard to see it.
Now, what's when you talk about, you know, do you have kind of like, as far as like the ultimate fight would probably be, if you were to get by Misha, obviously the fight's with Cyborg, do you have a kind of a time frame of how far along you want to be in the sport before you face her? And when you've watched her fight, I mean, what's kind of your scouting report on Cyborg?
I think she's a big, strong chick that's not really technically that good, and she's been able to bully a bunch of other people around, and she hasn't really fought anyone that's a real athlete yet. And I think that's the day that she runs into someone that she cannot muscle, she's going to be in a whole lot of trouble.
Is there a particular person in your career that maybe it was the most fulfilling win for you? It can be either in MMA or in judo. I mean, maybe somebody you had a rivalry with, or maybe it was like your first pro win or your first amateur win, or Julia Budd. Is there like one name that you're like, man, that's my favorite victory?
My favorite victory was the semifinals, the 2007 World Championships in Rio de Janeiro. And it was actually the same venue that they had UFC Rio at. And it was completely packed, and I was fighting the defending world champion in the semifinals, and she actually dislocated my elbow doing something illegal early in the fight, and I was behind at the very end, and I threw her at the last few seconds, you know, with just like a really, really cool one-handed throw with arm that she broke, and, you know, even though I wasn't Brazilian, the whole crowd just freaked out, and that was my favorite fight ever, that one.
Now, looking forward a little ways, let's just say that you go undefeated, 20-0 in a career, and you're 32, 33 years old, and you decide, okay, this was great. I am an all-time great. I made my career. Now I need to move on to something else. What do you see yourself doing after mixed martial arts?
After mixed martial arts, I think I'm going to open my own you know, place. I feel like obligated to keep training. I have to do a lot of stunt work, and then I'm going to start making warrior babies.
for your babies.
What's you got your nickname from Roddy Piper, I guess. And what's kind of like your relationship with that? And did you watch wrestling as a kid?
I did watch wrestling as a kid. I lived in I grew up in like Jamestown, North Dakota. You know, where I thought it was all real for a while. But Roddy Piper just seemed like it fit the best. You know, like the name just fit along with my name, and plus, you know, I loved his movies and his wrestling. And every time everyone tried to think of a nickname, they're like, you know, Rowdy always came up first. We tried thinking of other ones, but it always came back to Rowdy. It was meant to be. And Rowdy's a good friend of Gene's. So I doubt he remembers this, but like before he even had my first amateur fight, you know, he came to the opening of Gokor's Jim Hyacin. He moved to a new big location, and you know, I told him I was going to be a fighter, and I'd like to use his nickname. He was like, sure, whatever, fine. I'm sure he never thought about it again, you know.
Now some people start bringing it up to him.
Yeah, now people are like bringing it up.
You know, one last question here for myself. As you start to build up some fame here, as you talked about, it's kind of been a turnaround in the last couple of weeks. As people start to know your name, is there anybody in particular that you've always maybe wanted to train with, or maybe somebody in the business you've always wanted to meet, and now that these opportunities are coming up, you want to take the opportunity to meet or train with this person?
Yeah, I want to be the only person that Nick Diaz likes. That is my goal. I want to train with Nick Diaz and be the only person he likes.
Well, then you're going to have to...
You really tried.
Yeah,
maybe I could. I don't know. It's a lofty goal.
You're going to have to start doing triathlons and no more chocolate.
Oh, I can't run, dude. I can't run at all.
Oh, that's going to be trouble then.
Can you bike?
I can bike, but...
Okay. He loves to bike.
Okay, well, maybe we can get like a little double bike and go down the beach and eat licorice. I don't
sure.
know.
Sure. You'll be best buddies for a third of the day.
One third? No, I eat a whole day. It's like, until you run out of licorice, then it's over.
That's right. Now, Rhonda, do you have any, I want to give you a chance, if you've got a Facebook, Twitter, any type of social media, any sponsors, or if you'd like to put the word out for sponsors, now's your chance.
Alrighty. You can follow me on Twitter, @ Rhonda Rousey, RONDARUSEY. My website's RhondaMMA.com, RONDAMMA. Sponsors are Citizens of Humanity, Pilani Watches, BossRootin.com, Clinch Gear. What else am I forgetting? I always forget somebody. Who am I forgetting? Pilani Citizens. Nah, whatever. If anyone else is mad at me for forgetting, you know, they can take it up with me later.
You can plug them on the next interview you do in about
I'll plug
them
on the next interview, and I'm going to give a shout out to everyone at Dynamics MMA, Glendale Fighting Club, Highest MMA, SP Golden Boys, and Results Personal Training.
All right, well, Ron, I want to thank you very much for doing the show today, and best of luck, and hopefully that Misha Tate fight gets signed in the next couple of weeks here, and we can all look forward to that. But fine work, as always, and thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again after a while.